Blog Talk Radio.
Than running rings. That's why we're here to sing football. Sunday in the snow, referees whistle blows. Weekend warriors toe to toe. Football.
So old timers, do you remember the names like Bronco Nagurski and Night Train Lane, Bulldog Turner, my man Sam Huff? In the snow and the mud, they were still real tough. Crazy Leg Church, and remember Raymond Berry asked me if they hit hard, and I say very. Paul, Christian, Bunny, Young Lady Moore, it's them I adore. They seem to always score. Ed Sprinkle, defensive end for those years. Gene Big Daddy Liston was the man to fear. You have Steve Van Buren and Otto Graham. Johnny Unitas had the arm of a Superman. We had Charlie Trippi and Gino Marquette. If you're searching for a champion, they're your best bet. Wish I could quarterback like Johnny Lou Jack or even Sid Luckman, as a matter of fact. Do you remember Red Brains, the Galloping Ghost? He could do a 95 running coast to coast. You had Norm Van Brocklin, a real great player, so swift with his moves that he could be mayor. Why ain't Tittle, Allie Madison? Hey, I remember all those guys from back in the days.
It's the sort of thing better than diamond rings. That's why we're here to sing football. Sunday in the snow, referees whistle blows. Weekend warriors toe to toe. Football. 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 Football.
What's going on, everybody? It's your boy, Kelly Mike, coming at you with a new episode of CMT Firestorm. We got our panel here today. We got Big Tex. How's it going, Tex?
What's going on, man? Busy, busy, busy sports week, busy week of politics, busy everything, man.
Busy everything. How's it going up in the chat, Mike?
How's it going, Kelly, Mike, Tex? Like Tex said it, yeah. Especially with the big news today. You know, hey, it's like you said, it's politics, everything. It's a lot going on right now.
A lot going on in the world today. Okay, let's get it. Let's start to get it cracking here. First thing I want to start off with, the big news in college football. University of Oregon was informed by the NCAA today that they will be hit with scholarship restrictions as well as 3 years probation. A lot of opinions going on about this, especially with the recent sanctions that have been put on Penn State, Ohio State, and USC. People are wondering, you know, maybe they go too light on Oregon, maybe they not go hard enough or too hard, or, well, you know, what do you guys think? What do you think about that, Jamal?
Well, first, let's just go ahead and say it. We know the NCAA is going to deal with everybody else one way, and then they'll deal with USC and Miami in a different way. I don't think this is as bad as Penn State. Penn State, you had cover-ups. You know, the deal at Penn State was where you couldn't get players if everybody knew what Sandusky was doing, what was going on. You couldn't, you know, the program couldn't profit from having that over their head. Instead, they just hid that. So, you know, they caught whatever sanctions they caught, rightfully so. But as far as Oregon is concerned, I mean, it took them a little while to come forward with something. I feel about them that there really was nothing there. Just like I don't think there's anything major at Miami, although we have that investigation coming to a close soon. I really can't expound a ton on it because I haven't heard a ton about it. I know what happened with the Scholies and the probation. But, I mean, it's, you know, It's field night. It's Oregon. Nothing's going to happen to Oregon. Now, Chip Kelly, he can't come back and coach college without NCAA's approval. But
that kind of piqued my interest too, because I don't even think that was the case with Pete Carroll. So
yeah.
You know that kind of piqued my interest, and that's kind of actually what set me off with wondering, okay, what really happened, because like I said, if they could hit if they could hit USC, the school, with that much sanction, and not sanction the coach at all, but it seems like, in this case they're gonna, in this case they're evening it out. I don't know. Like I said, to me it just seems kind of off tilt. Like you said, of course they're gonna do, every school is different. SC, Miami, Ohio State, the kind of the flagship programs. Oregon is still a developing program, and like you said, they got Nike behind them. That's a lot of money. So it's definitely going to have an impact on the decision. Mike, what do you think about this?
Well, I guess it's not too much of a shock, because then we retain all these allegations, and they got the three years of probation. So, hey, like Tech said, it's not as worse as Penn State. So, it kind of hurts. I was a fan of myself. I think Chip Kelly might have known this was coming. He said, hey, he apologized to the program and found his chance to get out and have to be dealing with all this and a circus. So he got out before everything finally hit the wall where they're going to be on probation for 3 years. So I guess he kind of might have knew that this was going to happen.
But they got off light, though. There's nothing.
Yeah, let me ask you this, though, Tex. Do you think that if Chip Kelly was there, do you think he possibly could have gotten fired over this? Seeing as how they're restricting him from coming back for 18 or 15 months, whatever, even if he does find a school that wants him to come back to college.
Well, here's the thing, though. Even though he'd have to wait, he still would be let back in. It wouldn't be, it's not like it's a, a lifetime ban from the school. And is it supposed to be that long? I thought it was just conditional. I didn't know there was a time frame when he could come back.
It's an 18-month show cause order. So basically it's saying any school that wanted to hire him would have to come before the infractions committee to determine if the school would be subject to certain procedures based on him becoming their head coach.
Okay. I don't know. I really couldn't say. I feel like it's Oregon. I feel like they have a team that's up and coming. I think it's Eugene, it's field night. People shouldn't act surprised that nothing happened to Oregon, and I wouldn't be surprised if nothing happened even if Chip Kelly was still there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if this is Boise State, and maybe, or if it's Missouri or something like that, maybe they get hit hard. You know what I'm saying? But
exactly.
It is Oregon.
Yeah, I mean, at least
I guess,
seeing USC, like, Mike, USC's almost done with their probation, right? Y'all got another year left?
Yeah, this will be the last year of probation for them. Technically they're not on probation anymore like they were, but this will be their last year of scholarship restriction. And just to compare it, Oregon has one scholarship restriction. USC has 15 a year. So, just to put that, put that in perspective of each other, 15 scholarships each year from SC compared to one from Oregon.
Yeah, that's a big difference right there.
Huge. And it was a three-year bowl ban, and like I say, regular probation, and pretty much, like I say, it cost a couple of coaches their jobs. But, to me, like I said, I don't, you know, they're just now, it's funny because they're just now requesting for the papers behind the USC sanctions to be released. They have not been released yet, and they're going to do the Freedom of Information Act on that. I think it's the Attorney General, one of them two, is trying to do the Freedom of Information Act on that to try to get them to release those records to see exactly, you know, like I say, nobody really even knows what happened still. And in my opinion, you know, with this Oregon thing, it seems like this guy out of Houston, you know, this Willie Lyles, who was running a scouting service, to me, I mean, it pretty much seemed like he, you know, like they're doing, you know, what goes on in college basketball all the time. You know, you get these guys, I think they call them sharks or something like that, and they'll see a young college basketball player, you know, they'll kind of mentor them and they'll steer them, you know, especially, you know, the young players will have a father figure and they'll steer them, you know, they'll try to steer their career, steer them towards a certain guy, you know, a certain school, you know, and this and that. And to me, it seems like, you know, pretty much that's what was going on, you know, with this whole Oregon Willie Lyles thing. Now, like I said, they haven't released the whole story yet. Like, you know, I mean, he was running a legitimate recruiting service and, you know, it just, like I say, I don't know. They haven't released the full, you know, the full impact. They know that it was over running back Lake Seastrunk, who's since left the school and is at Baylor. He had a heck of a season coming off of Baylor. He's going to be a dark horse Heisman contender this year. And like I say, you know, Oregon at one point was getting a steady influx of Texas players. They had Seastrunk, I believe. Who was it year before?
LaMichael James.
Yeah, LaMichael James. Even what's the boy we was talking about this year from DeSoto, Texas? What was his name? Or he ended up switching, didn't he? He ended up decommitting from Oregon, didn't he?
Yeah, left. He left. He got out of there.
Yeah, exactly.
Was he heading back to that guy? I think he was heading back to Texas, right, or USC?
I think he went. I think he ended up at UT. Maybe I don't know. I can't really remember his name right now. But he was a top ranked running back. They said he could have been one of the fastest guys in the nation. He's like a 4.3, 4.2 kind of guy. So you know, just a very, you know, very fast kind of guy. Scat back, you know, typical Oregon kind of back would have probably, you know, came in and fit right in. You know, but like I said, when you have Quay, you know, he was probably, you know, like I said, he built. Maybe he didn't want to go there. Maybe the school told him, you know, hey, we got too many questions about about your process to coming here. You know, like I said, we won't know until, you know, probably 5 years from now when they, you know, 5-7 years whenever the statute of limitations is from to hold that paperwork in. And you know, like I say, it's a process. NCAA isn't perfect, you know, but like I say, it's there for a reason. It can't just be a free for all, so. You know, but like I say, some of his questions are, you know, some of his practices are very questionable. Moving on, I would like to look at the talent evaluation process in college football. We're going to look at college football and the NFL later on. I'm a really big college football kind of guy. I like watching college football games. Even high school football, I like watching, you know, like I said, I like watching the top games. When they put them on ESPN, I'll go. If there's a state championship, you know, in the area, I'll go, something like that. It's really, I like, you know, really looking at some of the lower levels, like high school, then on to college. I think you can see the talent, you know, because the talent really shines out, you know, easy, you know, a lot easier than it does on the NFL, because everybody's talented on the NFL. Even if you're a third stringer, you're more talented than 200 other, you know, you're more trying to get for the 200 other people on the, you're one of the top 200 football players in the world. So, you know, but on the high school level, you know, you can see guys pull away, you know, based on how, you know, it's not, maybe not even so much skill, but the physical attributes, you know, of watching a high school running back like Adrian Peterson or a quarterback like Vince Young, you know, you can see that stand out. And, you know, to me, I really appreciate that. You know, like I said, you know, me playing, you know, we all play college sports. You know, you can see that, you know, you can see that, you can tell the guys.
Hello?
That's cool.
Yes.
Football game. And I tell that this was going to be a guy that was going to, you know, move on to the next level and be able to play the next level of sports.
Who are we talking about now?
Just talent evaluation on the high school level.
Yeah.
And, I mean, not high, but college level. And I want to know, what do you guys think goes into the talent evaluation part of the recruiting and the recruiting process of itself coming from high school to college? Tex?
Well,
put yourself as a recruiter for University of Miami. You know, what do you look at in players?
Well, I think you do want, the first thing you want is you want athletes. I think you want speed. I think you want to look to capitalize in your region. If you're Miami, you want to lock down Dade County, which has a plethora of athletes. You want to try to get out of state to Texas if you can, get to Louisiana. If I'm Miami, there's a little pipeway up north towards Piscataway, towards Rutgers, a little bit. I want to work over there. I want to get some work in California. But you really in your region, in your area, you really want to nail the guys, the transcendent guys. You know, the guys are where you, like we were talking about, like you look at them and you're like, oh man, you know, it takes 10 seconds to see. You understand what I'm saying? It takes 10 seconds
exactly.
To see these kind of guys where if, you know, you just, you know, if they don't screw up, if things go right for them where they go to college at, you just know they're going to pros. Like you said, Adrian Peterson, me personally, LaRon Landry, who I saw in high school. I remember Julius Peppers when he came out. I used to have this thing where I would always tell people, I'm like, man, Peppers was ready coming out of high school. I mean, he was so dominant in high school. It was unbelievable. And of course he went to North Carolina, which is right up the street from where he played high school ball at. But you just want to lock down. You want to lock down the athletes. You want to get the best of the best where you are at. Before you want to try to pull the best of the best out of other states too. Of course, not everybody can do it. Bama, Miami used to do it all the time. USC can do it. LSU, Ohio State, Georgia, Bama, you know, these schools that can recruit everywhere. But mostly you just want to get the best players. And if you're somebody like Nick Saban, I mean, you want to get guys that fit. You want to get guys that want to play football. Of course, get an education. You know, Bama has a lot of 2- and 3-star guys that go there, and they play pretty well. They fit into the system, and they play well. That's what people don't realize. People think Bama just grabbing 5- and 4-star guys all the time. That's not true. They get 2- and 3-stars. These guys come in here, and they play like 4 stars, and they contribute to the program. So there's many different places, many different things you want to look at and different states that you want to try to pull from. And, of course, connections are everything. Connections are everything.
Okay. Mike, do you have anything you want to add to that?
Not really. Like you said, the best of the best, you know. You good, there's always somebody there that's going to find you and get you, no matter what.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, like Tech said, it's like I said, you know, these guys, you know, you can see the talent, you know, standing out, especially, you know, in a high school athlete, you know, within the first 10 seconds. Like I said, I remember, you know, I played against De La Salle, you know, and they had DJ Williams and Atari Callen and all these other guys there. And, you know, I hate to say it, but we were overmatched. You know, it was almost like those dudes in high school. You know, it's like, you know, like where, you know, Joker dude looked like Eddie George, you know, running a 4.4, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, just, you know, and then, you know, like I said, when I came to Florida, I was able to see the state championship game. I think a lot of us, well, I don't know if you guys went too. We saw when Lincoln played They played, I forget who they played, but they had Antonio Cromartie, Pat Watkins, Alfonso Thorpe. You know, they were loaded that year. And just seeing those guys out there, you know, on that level, I mean, it was, you know, speed, size, and they were, you know, pretty much all option kind of team. And it was, you know, it was murder. You know, and it's just, you know, like I say, you can really see the talent stand out. And I think, you know, like Tech said, you know, once you get a bigger school, you know, you can kind of just, you know, get the guys that you hope that, you know, you see the talent and they'll be okay. You know, now, you know, of course, now you have to factor in behavior more because of social media and other things like that, which we'll get into a situation like that with a guy later. But, you know, I think, like I said, I think there's so many different things go into the, you know, into that talent evaluation part of the transfer from high school to college that people really don't, you know, fully understand. And speaking of that, ESPN, they're starting to release their top 25 future, where they not only do they, you know, put in the team's current talent level, they also rank in recruiting, coaching, facility, and they try to project it out for 5 years. I haven't seen the full list yet, but of course, you know, at the top they have Alabama, and, you know, like I said, it's really hard to argue with because, like I said, they're returning champs, and they're getting five, you know, top five, you know, top 10 recruiting classes constantly, if not number one. You know, so it's, you know, and they, you know, and they have a steady, you know, steady coaching. You know, unless something happens, Nick Saban leaves there, I mean, they're going to be in contention for the next 5 years. What's interesting too, I noticed on the list, is you're starting to see some of the programs that might have fallen off but are doing better lately. You see, my dad, Miami, highly ranked on there. Ohio State's on there. I believe they're number two, maybe even. USC is on there. So, you know, you're starting to see some of the other programs that maybe might have fallen off. They're kind of starting to work themselves back in there and get into the mix. So, you know, it's a very interesting list. If you have a chance, go ahead and check it out. And, you know, that's on you have to pay to look at that. It's on ESPN.com, you know, on the Insider. But it's a very interesting list. Okay. Excuse me. Next, what I want to look at is I want to talk about a Heisman candidate for next year, maybe even Dark Horse candidate. Of course, we have Johnny Manziel. He's going to be he's a reigning Heisman candidate, freshman coming back. He's going to be highly ranked up there entering into this season. I want to know who else do you guys think are going to be on that list? And if you know any dark horses, let me know them. We'll start with you, Tex.
Well, you have Manziel on there. I think McCarron might get some consideration. Taj Boyd. You have Braxton Miller. You have Marquise Lee. One guy to watch, my dark horse, and it's simply because defensive players don't win the Heisman generally, is Jadeveon Clowney. You know, Clowney should have been at the Heisman ceremony this past year along with Jarvis Jones. But, you know, we understand how it works. But those are my guys for Heisman. Also, keep an eye on Marcus Mariota. If he has a huge year and Oregon makes a BCS game, I mean, you might be looking at him as a front runner for the Heisman, because his numbers more than likely in that offense, they'll be, besides Taj Boyd and Bridgewater, who also is a Heisman candidate. I mean, his numbers might be just off the wall. Generally, Oregon quarterback's numbers are.
Exactly. Mike, what do you think about that?
Yeah, Bridgewater was my guy. I'm impressed with him, how he played with Miami. I mean, Miami, Louisville being from Miami. So that's a team right there. And I feel, of course, he might be contention because he's a quarterback and is Alabama. I might look at him. Alabama quarterback. I'm trying to think of his name.
A.J. McCarron.
They'll come to me. I know his name.
A.J. McCarron.
A.J. McCarron. you know, he, you know, being the quarterback, he could be a guy there, you know, that comes right in there. Of course, Johnny Manziel, Texas A&M, you know, of course, he won as a freshman, so definitely he'll be a guy highly on everybody's radar now because he's a Heisman. They're going to expect more, you know, being year two. And he was a freshman that won the Heisman. So, you know Texas A&M was going to be up there and possibly could be that team that could be challenging Alabama, that could challenge Bama. They beat them last
year. It seems like now that we have this these quarterbacks running these spread option offenses, pretty much you're almost going to get yourself a quarterback that's going to win the Heisman, unless you get a running back out of a pro style offense, you know, like a Bama or you know somebody you know somewhere else that run, you know that's going to be a highly ranked team, highly rated profile team that runs a pro style, you know, and you have a running back that has a you know, transcendent type of season. It seems like you're going to get your quarterback, you know, because these quarterbacks are getting, you know, 1,000, you know, 1,200 yards rushing, as well as throwing for 3,000 yards. And, you know, speaking of that, Mike, up in your neck of the woods, I listed a dark horse candidate on the CMT website. His name is Jordan Lynch. He's a quarterback up there, which I wasn't even paying attention to him last year. But, last year, this guy put up 3,100 yards passing with 25 touchdowns, only 6 picks, and he also ran for 1,800 yards, which is ludicrous. You know, even though he's a NIU, you know they play a couple of major schools, but you know 1,800 yards and 19 touchdowns, you know, at rushing combined with 3,100 you know yards passing. That's a major season, but you know, like I said, he's a dark horse. You know, to come out. I don't know what NIU schedule looks like next year, but they'd have to play. You know, they have to play a couple of big boys and knock them off pretty hard for them to get some real recognition. Have you heard anything about this guy there in Chicago, Mike?
I was gonna say, you know, they was at a bowl game, you know, this past year, and then that coach is the new head coach of NC State. So yeah, they was making some noise.
Yeah, well, they played. I remember that they played Florida State and they got muddy in that game.
That was the Orange Bowl
game, and Florida State kind of put it on them in that game. So I don't want to use that as a barometer. Hopefully, it's not going to be a barometer of his what he's going to be going through next season because they put a hurt on him. But once again, that was Florida State though. But you know, that wasn't too pretty what they did to them. But it seems like NIU seems like you know every couple of years they'll have a standout player, you know, from Michael Turner before, and who else they have there? I think Avon Colburn. I don't know if NIU or West Virginia, but you know every now and then they'll have a standout player, and you know who will make a little bit of noise and end up getting ranked pretty highly. But like I said, with the Heisman. You know, it just seems like I said, it seems like it's going to be a quarterback's award for the next couple of years. Maybe a wide receiver like a Marquise Lee, if he has a good, you know, has a similar year receiving, you know, 1,800 yards receiving, you know, he probably have to add in some kick returns or punt returns too. Maybe you know, like I say, maybe get you know 5 punt return, you know, 4 or 5 punt return touchdowns, you know, make himself you know a game changer. Then a guy like that, you know. Marquise Lee, Sammy Watkins, type of guy could put themselves, you know, into the Heisman talk too. Tex, you spoke about a defensive player, Jadeveon Clowney. A couple of years ago, we had Ndamukong Suh. He finished third. What do you think? And Matthew Teau, you know, he finished. He came last year. I think, like I said, I think besides a cornerback or somebody that's turning kicks, I think if a guy's going to play solely on defense, I think, like I said, I think a pass rushing player has the best chance to do it. What do you think Jadeveon Clowney would have to do this year to be considered a Heisman finalist, maybe a Heisman Trophy winner? I mean, will we have to see like a record-breaking kind of season, you know, 25, 26 sacks, something like that, or will he just have to dominate in a way like Sue did, showing for sure that he's the best defensive player even in the country? What do you think?
Well, to me, there's no doubt he might have been the best defensive player in the country last year as a sophomore. If you want to base it on production, if Jarvis Jones wasn't, you know, apologies to Manti Te'o. But about 60, 70 tackles, 80, about 20, you know, 20 tackles for loss, about 13, 14 sacks. That ought to do it. I mean, it was really enough last year, although Jarvis Jones, you know, statistically might have been the best in the land, who I thought was a Heisman finalist, that Te'o was. I mean, those are about the numbers that Clowney could put up to where he could win the Heisman. But you know, then you got these quarterbacks. You know what I'm saying? You got these running backs. But those are the numbers I put out there. He more than likely he'd have to hit those to get any consideration. But there's no doubt in my mind he'll be the top defensive player in the nation, and just as an overall player, there's no doubt in my mind that he's not the top player going into next year, period. Not just defensive player, but just the defense or offense.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. I like Jadeveon Clowney too. When I look at his season from last season, which really impressed me was his sacks. He almost had a sack every game. He wasn't one of these guys that came out and gave you five sacks and then didn't have any other. He didn't do spurts. He showed really good consistency throughout the whole season, and he even missed a game and still ended up second in the country in sacks. And like I say, this is, you know, people, you know, this is a guy, you know, he's only going to get better. You know, once he gets his technique down, you know, gets it down pat, he's gonna be a force. I think that for a guy like him to win the Heisman, he would have to. I don't know if you guys remember when Sue was playing, he had that game against Texas where he treated Colt McCoy like he was his baby. Didn't he even knock him out of that game?
I can't really remember. I know he busted him up a couple of times real good.
He what'd you say, Mike?
You talking about college or NFL?
College.
Are you talking about what?
Yeah, it was in Nebraska. I think it was even the Big 12 championship game, possibly. And he put it on.
He did put it hard on him, and then, you know, you saw what happened when he played Alabama, where he got the shoulder was knocked him out.
Yeah, it was, yeah. And, you know, like I said, I think, you know, if Clowney, if he can get, you know, he's gonna have opportunities next year. You know, you're going to be playing, you know, a lot of banner quarterbacks. Like we said, you know, Manziel, McCarron, you know, if he gets on the stage and puts those guys' numbers on the ground, you know, puts their backs on the ground, I think, you know, like I say, people are going to look at him. You know, he's a very, very physically imposing guy. You know, he's one of these, you know, one of these muscle guys, you know, very physically imposing guy. He's fast. I haven't heard any off season. I mean, off the field infractions with him or anything like that. He seems like he has a very nice personality, a very engaging kind of guy. So, like I said, I think, you know, if he gets out there and, you know, like I said, has a couple of those kind of games, and, you know, like Tech said, gets around 20 sacks, has a lot of tackles, and just you know shows his versatility and you know and his in a whole range of what he can do. Like I said, I think it's starting to get more acceptable for defensive players to get up there as opposed to in the past. So, you know, like I said, I think it could be very, very likely that he could, you know, end up being a finalist, if not the Heisman winner. What do you think about that, Mike?
Yeah, it's a lot of, you know, the pressure, but he's either here to have it or not. So, I mean, it's just a little something. Main thing for him is to stay healthy. don't have no serious injury because, you know, he's projected to be number one pick or not number one. He's definitely going to be in the top five.
Exactly. Yeah. I think it's going to. I think with him, I think it's going to come down. I think a lot of it's going to come down to who has that pick. Like I said, definitely he's not going to fall out of the top five. You know, but it's going to be such a quarterback rich draft next year. It's going to be interesting. Next year's draft is going to be one of the more interesting drafts in history, I think, because like I said, you got a possibility of if not for Clowney. You could have the first seven picks all be quarterbacks, and nobody would be wrong with picking them. So,
yep,
it's gonna be very interesting next year to see how that's gonna turn out. One quarterback I want to talk about real quick when we wrap up college, guy, you know, like I said, we haven't really got that much into him or his team because they were on bowl ban last year. But besides University of Alabama, this was the only undefeated team in the country, and that is the Ohio State University with star quarterback Braxton Miller. Like I said, these guys, you know, they're on a bowl ban. I think this is the last year of bowl ban. You know, they have the coach, they got the talent. You know, what are your thoughts on them? What are your thoughts on Braxton Miller and Ohio State, Mike?
What's going on with Braxton Miller, though? Kind of give me a little 411 on what happened.
I just want to know, what do you think about him? What do you think their odds are for this season? You know, he's a dark horse Heisman contender, running and passing. You know, they got pretty much everything in place to make a run. I mean, what do you think about them for this year?
Oh, yeah. Team that went undefeated. So, yeah, you know, just being Urban Meyer's, second year, and they had an undefeated season last year. So, yeah, it's going to definitely be attention always on them because that's Ohio State, the Ohio State University. So, you know, he do what he do, and, yeah, he could be up there.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Tex? You think this is the team that could go all the way, maybe unseat Alabama?
No. I think Braxton Miller, I think he's a special athlete. I think Urban Meyer – and you know what? I think Ohio State, the Big Ten is Ohio State's to lose every single year. It's hard for me to – I mean, Urban Meyer is going to get his athletes. He's not going to reach down like Nick Saban or Les Miles, but he has his pipeline. He's going to get his athletes. I don't think he'll get enough to beat an Alabama or LSU in their best years, but certainly Ohio State runs a Big Ten. And while I think Braxton Miller is a special quarterback, I don't see Ohio State challenging somebody like Alabama as Bama is. I don't see that.
It might could put up a little fight if that do happen because, like you said, when Nick Saban in his second year, what he did with Bama, you saw how they did what they did. Then they went, they came close, but it was a change. Like, wow, this team was right on track. And we all know about Urban Meyer, man. He, you know, he's a heck of a coach. So it wouldn't surprise me, but I still think maybe for them to, you know, be on that same level, it might not probably another 2 years. Give them probably 2 years, and they'd be on that level.
I won't even give him that many years because Urban Meyer simply is not going to recruit like Alabama is. You understand what I'm saying? And this is what I'm saying. You have Braxton Miller. Braxton Miller goes. I mean, it's kind of like with Texas and Alabama a year ago. I mean, not a year ago, but a few years ago. Colt McCoy goes down. Who you putting in? You're putting in, what's the guy's, I can't even remember his name now. He was so sorry.
David Ash or something like that, I think.
No, it wasn't Ash. It's like, it starts with a G or something like that. I don't know.
Oh, Gary Gilbert or something like that. Gilbert or something.
Gary Gilbert. And this sucker has to come in and play. If Mark Ingram goes down, oh, no problem. We'll just put in Trent Richardson. You see what I'm saying, Mike? That's what I'm talking about. When I'm talking about the talent, like I said, Braxton Miller is a special athlete. He's a special athlete, but across the board, These Big Ten, the Big Ten schools are not running on the same field with Alabama. We already saw that with Notre Dame. Notre Dame is beating Michigan.
Let's get another point of view on this. The one of the mouths of the South. We have Clausell Mathis on here. How's it going,
All right, man.
I thought it was going to be Charlie Whitey.
It's me.
I wanted to hurry up and get done with this section before you got on.
What was the question?
What was the question?
We're talking about Ohio State and Braxton Miller. Do you think they can unseat Alabama coming up next year? Being completely unbiased. Seeing as they were only two undefeated teams in college football this year.
They have a chance because I think I overheard Tech saying, yeah, it's Ohio State's division to lose. So they go through the Big Ten undefeated. They can skate to the national championship game who's going to beat them? I mean, whereas the SEC, they have to beat each other out. You know, they're going to be pounding. I mean, Alabama might lose the game, you know. And if it's just one shot, you know, you scheme well. Look at what happened with Ohio State versus Miami. I mean, they had a very good plan in 2004, I think it was. 2002.
I think Miami should have won that game, and I think since they didn't go take it, I think they deserve to lose it. I don't know about scheming and planning and all that.
Scheme? Are you crazy? You didn't think that was a scheme?
I don't know about that, buddy. What was that?
I disagree.
What was that flag at the end of the game? Oh.
What was that flag? No, they got lucky. But what I'm saying is that year, I was watching the game. You were watching the game. You could clearly see that Miami was the better team. They had a very good game plan put in place, Ohio State, and they won. You know, same with I know we're too young for this, but when they had it on that 30 for 30 documentary about the U losing to Penn State that game, you know, Miami had the better team, but Penn State had to get a better game plan. From that standpoint, you know, from coach to coach, coach against coach, Ohio State would have a chance, but player for player, obviously Alabama's better.
And that's been my whole point. I mean, when a Big Ten team gets a BCS title game against the SEC, it's always a bloodbath. I mean, when has it not been a bloodbath? If we just pull up the numbers, the Big Ten.
Yeah, it's been bloodbath lately.
Horrible. It was a bloodbath with LSU in Florida.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. I'm just thinking maybe, like Clausell said, Ohio State, they'll probably get there unscathed because of the way the Big Ten is looking right now. And, maybe Braxton Miller, right game, right time. All it takes is, one game for a guy to be transcended.
What'd you say? Only team I think could beat Ohio State in a regular season, I think maybe Penn State. You know, they're stacking up some talent. Shockingly, they're stacking up talent for some reason. I don't know why, but they're stacking up pretty good talent there. So, to talk about that,
what I think was going on at Penn State is you're going to start seeing a lot of guys who see opportunity because even though they have a ban and, they have this bowl ban and they got the restrictions or whatever, a lot of guys are going to want to go there just for the opportunity. Like I say, it's still Penn State. It's still Happy Valley. It's still, it's still $100,000, $100,000 person stadium. So even though you're not going to be on get to play in your bowl game, and just think that's only for 3 years. So this year's freshman, their senior year, they'll get to play in a bowl game. You got to look at it like that. I think, like I said, a couple of recruiting class. Like I say, I think it's going to be harder and harder to stop the bigger schools to completely kill them. Like I said, look what happened with SC. Everybody's talking about, this year, but, last year they were a 2-2 team. They just had a bowl ban, so they couldn't go to a bowl. But, it's going to be harder and harder to stop these bigger schools, with these kind of restrictions. Now, maybe in the future, next year, like I said, I don't know. But,
you know, for Penn State. But I mean, for right now, you know, they got the number one quarterback from last year, and it looks like they're gonna have a solid recruiting class this year. But like I said, the one thing I was thinking about, you know, like Braxton Miller, like I say, I mean, I look at, like I say, it only takes one game. I know what you guys are saying about, you know, Alabama is a more talented team than them. I ain't gonna argue that. But,
they're the most talented team in the country by far now. They're the most talented team in the country. At every position. They are stacked.
They are stacked.
I'm telling you.
They are.
They currently are stacked. They are stacked at every single position. They're like Miami on steroids. They're like the Miami to Haiti on steroids.
They lost to Texas A&M last year, right, Clavel? They lost, right?
I don't know why, but they are like Miami. They are Miami on steroids. I'm telling you.
They lost last year to Texas A&M, so.
They did. Oh, well.
So it's easy to say that they could lose to Ohio State.
Man, hold on, Texas. What was your question? I'll be glad to answer that.
What makes them Miami on steroids?
Because they're getting all the top recruits in the nation on the regular now, man. I mean, every day I get a news feed. Alabama got a number one recruit. Man, I'm telling you, they're stacked.
This is what you don't understand, Clavel. I mean, you should.
Yeah, I know they changed their minds. I know that. I know they can change their minds. I got you.
The thing is, for schools like Miami and SC and these other schools. That's regular, man. I mean, you know, if your school's a top school, you're supposed to have a top 10 recruiting class every year. That's regular, bro.
Every day I get a news feed about somebody going to Alabama who's a top recruit. I don't get a news feed for Miami. I don't get a news feed every day for USC. So let me just go there. I get a few for USC. I'm not going to lie to you. Once every blue moon, I get something for USC. But I don't get one for Miami.
They didn't feel good for right now. Let him feel good. He all right. They got
That's what. And see, this is what I understand about Clavel either. Miami is a school that was coming off sanctions, so he knows what sanctions can do to a school. But he's giving no others. He's not giving USC slack. He's not giving Miami slack. He's going right at him.
Hold on.
When Miami was on their sanctions, what happened to them? Did we hear anything? I mean, not Miami, but Alabama. Did we hear anything about Bama?
No. I'm not trying to understand your point. No, last year you were the one. Hold on. I don't want to disrupt your show. But last year you were the one that was saying USC is going to make it to the national championship. They're loaded, and I said they ain't loaded because I said they ain't loaded because he's going there to Happy Valley and begging.
I
was ready to go there.
I didn't say they were loaded. I said they were the number one team ranked team in the country.
And they weren't going. I knew
that
from day one.
That was by the AP, not by me. After week two, if you remember, I said after week two, Clavel, you might be right. They have a couple of injuries. They might be out.
You remember me saying that?
I did not say that.
What you said? No, you did not.
Oh man!
After they beat Hawaii, you were like, man, we're going to the national championship. And I said, hold up, man. After Lane Kiffin went to Happy Valley and begged Cyrus Reg to come to USC, I knew right then and there they're not going to be the number one team
what
in the nation.
That mean?
I didn't know
what
they were going. I knew right then and there.
What does that mean? How do you beg? What does that mean?
He went to Happy Valley. He did a little PowerPoint presentation saying, hey, we want you to come to USC.
How do you
come
know
on,
this?
Man. That's ridiculous. That don't sound like nobody going to win the national championship, and you know that. Come on, man.
How do you know all this, Clavel? Were you there?
Huh?
You had a
how do I know
there?
That he did a PowerPoint presentation? It was reported that he did that.
Reported by who?
ESPN. It was reported. College Football Live. They report it every day. Type it up. You got your computer. Type it up.
You never hear no news about USC. Now all of a sudden you're the big USC.
Oh,
news,
all right. Now you want to go in circles here. We can go to the next topic, Mike. It's your show, man. You just go in circles. You know that, man. Let's just go to the next show.
Like I said, all it takes, and like you know, before you got on, we were talking about the. ESPN, they're ranking they're doing the future rankings. Now, Alabama is number one because they're doing the rankings based on recruiting, coaching, stability, and current talent. But, like I said, You look at Miami, you look at SC, they started to become ranked higher and higher because they're coming back.
Yeah, they'll be back.
Penn State is going to be coming back. I think once they get rid of Mack Brown in Texas, Texas is going to come back.
That's going to be
tough. You know, you're not, like I say, it's very cyclical, Carvell. So, you know, while you're happy right now, you weren't happy 4 years. That's what I'm trying to say. When you guys were coming off your sanctions, you weren't happy when Tyrone Prothro was your best player.
Oh, please. You want to go there? That's a little shot. Oh, well. I'll take that. It's no big deal. I'm good.
When we were in college, you were talking about Alabama A&M more than you were talking about Alabama.
Not true, sir. Not true. That's not true.
You were talking about Alabama.
You know what? You know what?
And
you know what? USC wasn't doing nothing until when we were at FAMU. I don't know what you're talking about. They were not. USC didn't do anything to it. Whatever. First of all, let's get this straight. Put that aside. I agree with you. Teams are coming back. Miami will be back. I don't know about – hold on. It'll be a while for Miami to come back. USC, they're coming back. I don't think Lane Kiffin's the guy for that job. I don't think Lane Kiffin's going to bring him back. I don't think Lane Kiffin's going to bring him back.
Miami is easily a ten win team easily this year.
Well, when they do it, then we can say they'll be back. Okay. My point is this:
what they win, they won nine this year. didn't they might have won ten. I really don't even have the record in front of me.
Well, be relevant for the national championship, and then they'll be back. First thing is first. What my point is this: what Alabama's doing right now, and I know you're going to laugh and disagree with this. I don't care. What Alabama's doing right now. Is better than what USC did in the late 2000s, or when they had Reggie Bush in them. It's better. They're better than them, and they're gonna have one team. I predict before this dynasty's over in Alabama, they will have one team that is better than the 2001 Miami Hurricanes. You can book that on recording. They will have one team that will be better than the 2001 Miami Hurricanes. They'll have one.
They will
because at the rate at which they're pulling that talent. If the Ravens win, they pull that top talent. They're going to have one team that's going to be like that. They will. It might be this year. Huh?
Let me hold on. Let me tell you one thing. You might be correct, but let me tell you this: the one thing that's associated with getting all that top talent is getting too much talent. That's usually what happens to programs like Miami and SC because you can only have a certain amount of players on the field at all times.
That's right.
Look at what's starting to happen at places like Bama. You're going to start seeing more and more recruits like Phillip Sims, guys like Star Jackson who can't get on the field. We're going to start transferring to other schools.
Yeah, you're right. But, I mean, it just seems like they just replaced them.
I put it on the CMT website. You got the all-time list right now. Number one and number two, Miami and USC, 2001 Miami, 2005 USC. Alabama is not going to be
2005 USC.
Cool.
Texas won in 2005.
But whatever.
I think Alabama would have beat those USC teams. There's no doubt in my mind. Now Miami, 2001 Miami, I'll give them
that's
that.
That's because you're an Alabama fan, Glazer, and you're
whatever.
Crazy.
Whatever. Whatever.
Now,
we're gonna go to the NFL. Are we gonna go in circles with this? I can tell.
I want to get on to one other thing before we switch off of college. We're talking about talent evaluation earlier. USC has done it. Kentucky's done it. Alabama has done it. And LSU has done it. I'm talking about offering kids not even high school scholarships, eighth graders. Alabama recently offered Dylan Moses, I believe his name is. Linebacker, kid's like 6'2", 220 pounds already. And he's running like a 4.4, and he's in the eighth grade. And I want to know... SC also offered a quarterback a couple of years ago out of the seventh grade, David Fields. And Kentucky recently offered a eighth grader, too. I want to know, what do you guys think about offering kids this young scholarships? And do you think it's good or bad? Or do you think it's a joke? Or what do you guys think about that, Clavel?
No, I don't think they should offer them scholarships. I think they should wait until at least their junior or senior year to do it. I mean...
Why?
You never know, man. You don't want to put too much pressure on a kid like that. Yeah, let the kid be a kid. Don't let him get his head too big. Well, his head might get too big anyway by the girls in the class. But, don't put too much pressure on him to live up to certain expectations. Just let the guy be a kid, man. Let him do what he needs to do.
So you look at it more from the kid's point of view. As it'll
yeah, I look at it from the kid's point of view.
Okay, what do you think, Tech?
I'm with Clausell, man. That's just eighth grade. That's 4 years from when they come out. That's a little bit too much for me. I'm not trying to be funny or anything, but that's like, to me, that's like the athletic version of statutory wrestling. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't want to even think of no eighth graders. When I'm a college coach, I don't even want to think of offering no eighth grade kid. I'm not. Who knows what happens from the ninth all the way to the 12th one? Not looking at them at all. Just like if I'm an agent. I mean, I'm not hunting for these kids that aren't coming out of school. So
kind of should be forbidden fruit, kind of.
Yeah.
What do you think, Mike?
I say the same thing. I mean, everybody thought that Lane Kiffin was wilding when he had went after that. You know, the kid, you know, the 13-year-old able to come to USC. And so, like, I think, you know, I wouldn't be as a coach for that. I'm not even thinking about no eighth grader. You know, us eighth grader now, like you say, he's still a kid. You know, that's to say, he may not even want to play the sport no more or not be that good at that level.
So, I kind of look at it different. I mean, I think that if you get a kid who shows that he has this kind of talent, I mean, obviously these kids are showing that they have the talent right now, that they believe that they can make some sort of college roster already, you know. And I think, I mean, I don't know, it's just the way that this, I mean, I wouldn't, like I said, in a perfect world, of course I wouldn't be for it, but the way that this recruiting is going, how cutthroat the recruiting game is getting, I don't know. I think you have to get them early, you know what I mean? I mean, to throw a basketball analogy in there, if I'm University of Kentucky and I see an eighth grade LeBron James, don't I have to sign him? Because I know, you know, I mean, isn't the talent apparent right there that this dude is going to be, you know, if he's not the greatest, he's going to be a special kind of player, and I can, you know, and I can get him. I mean, you know, like I say, they got this Dylan Moses kid, maybe a quarterback, because quarterbacks develop differently, might be too far off, like SC. Even though the kid that SC signed, he's becoming one of the top quarterbacks right now. But this Dylan Moses kid, I mean, he's 6'2", 230, running a 4.4. You can't teach that on any level. You know what I mean? So, I mean, like I said, if I'm Bama and Nick Saban, I got to look at that like, okay, let's just, you know, let's give this guy a scholarship. You know, it's not like you're signing him. You're just giving him an offer. You know, it's going, hey, you know, you do what you're doing in 4 years, you go to my school. You know, if the kid commits to it, you know, that's on him. You know, but, I mean, you're throwing the offer out there. You got to assume that if you're a top player, you're going to get offers from that guy, you know, from those kind of schools anyway. So, you know, like I say, to me, I don't have that much of a problem with it. I don't, like I said, maybe if their whole recruiting game was different, I would. But the way it's going now, it's almost, you know, especially with all these decommitments and recommitments and this and that, I think, I don't know, it's almost you want to get your hooks, you know, it's bad to say, but you want to get your hooks in the kids as early as possible. And, you know, and make sure they're going to, you know, make sure they're already in the program, coming to your camps, you know, and everybody else knows that this is your dude. So, I mean, like I said, that's just, you know, that's just the way I think about it. If it was perfect, I'll go against it. But since it's not, I say it's all for, you know, do what you got to do to get who you got to get. Yeah. But anyway, let's make our transition over to the NFL right now in our second hour. Biggest news in the NFL is Aaron Hernandez. As we all know, he's been arrested for a charge with murder, as well as many other charges. He's been released by the New England Patriots. He was going to be a part of their tight end tandem with Rob Gronkowski. Both are very prolific tight ends. Seems like they might be without either one of them for at least the start of the season. Aaron Hernandez is going to be gone for a while. But anyway, we're going to start off a new section here on CMT Firestorm called Heads Up. two of our panelists have a disagreement about the effects that Hernandez is going to have on the Patriots. So we're going to have them hash it out, debate style. On one end, we have Jamal, and on the other end, we have Mike. Which one of you guys wants to start off?
Go ahead, Mike.
All right, Mike, go ahead, make your point. I think you're arguing for Aaron Hernandez. His absence is going to have a great impact, or what kind of impact they're going to have on the Patriots, correct?
Well, me and Jamal was kind of going at it. I mean, one of that little topic I was saying, I think he's going to leave a void there. You know, I think, you know, hey, he was a guy emerging, a star, and, you know, we don't know about Gronkowski. He's been hurt, you know, having surgeries and stuff, and I really thought that, you know, Hernandez, he's a guy, okay, but Gronko being out, they got Hernandez, since now you don't have Wes Walker, and then, you know, they cut Brandon Lloyd. It's just, man, who are they going to have to replace him? Because, you know, he's gone, and, it's, you know, this Patriots are a team where, you know, a lot, you know, a Super Bowl contending team, you know, that's a kind of a blow right there.
Okay. Tex, what do you have to say about that?
That's it? Nothing else? That's it?
Well, just go back. Y'all just go back and forth. Whatever, you know, whatever he says, you rebut what you say here.
And let's get something straight first. Nobody is ever debating that not having Aaron Hernandez doesn't hurt the Patriots as an offense. Is in terms of what they would like to do if they had him there and they had him healthy. But as far as leaving a void, I'm not a buyer on that, because first of all, it's a multi-dimensional offense. It's a scheme versatile offense. It's based around the spread, but the quarterback runs the offense, not the tight end. The Patriots won games without Hernandez. They've won games without Gronkowski. And while there is maybe three or four guys that bring the kind of skill set Hernandez brings to offense in the league, this is not the Vikings losing Adrian Peterson. This is not the Saints losing Drew Brees. Like I said, those right there are void. You're not going to replace Aaron Hernandez, but enter Shane Vereen. People talk about them losing Wes Welker on top of not having Hernandez. Well, Amendola gives them a vertical threat. Welker wasn't a vertical threat. Brandon Lloyd, he didn't do anything this past year. The Patriots have a top two running game, a top three offensive line, an elite quarterback. They have an elite coach. They won big games with less talent than what they've had when they had Gronkowski and Hernandez on the field. Years before they were winning games without Gronkowski and Hernandez. I don't think there's a void with him there. I don't even think his production is replaceable. But, you know, the Patriots have some skilled players. They have some young guys, but the main thing is they have the quarterback. The offense won't fall off. Now, you're talking about fantasy football, okay, but we're talking about real football. They're not going to fall off. They're going to come out Sunday. They're going to be ready with whatever they had. And you have to remember, even when they had Gronk and Hernandez on the field at the same time, again, it goes back to them being scheme versatile. The game plan on offense changed every single week. Not one week would you ever get the same thing from the New England Patriots. That's something to remember while we're sitting here talking about they're going to miss Hernandez. They never miss anybody. They didn't even miss Tom Brady.
Wow. Mike, what do you have to say about that?
Nah, they gonna miss the Tom Brady. Oh yeah, but I get what Tex was saying. Yeah, back when Matt Casper came in with that system, but yeah, I mean, you know, but yeah, I mean, he had a point right there, but you know, he was right on that point. Let me, like you said, the team is like our good friend Johnny from FAMU said, Johnny Troy, he was saying, well, I mean, their defense is trying to, you know, come in age now. Now it's about the offense. So they did at that time, had a, their defense was still solid, man, at that time. But now it's starting to, you know, it shows. So it might be different. So sooner or later, things do catch up.
Patriots front seven is out.
Let me go ahead and get it going against the Ravens, though, Tex. What happened?
Look, Mike, you point out one game. We talking about Von Miller is the best pass rusher in the NFL. He didn't get after Joe Flacco. I mean, it's you basing that off of one game? I mean, come on. You seen the Patriots front seven? Do you know who's in it? I mean,
yeah,
guys,
I know who's in it.
But we are talking about the engine. You know, it's a team full of leaders anyway, and we're talking about the engine, which is Tom Brady, the top three O-line. Mind you, spread offense with the second-ranked running game in the NFL. They control the ball. They play all kinds of different kind of football. Whatever you want to do, that's what they play. You understand what I'm saying? It's never the same thing every week. Of course, you know, it's bad not having Hernandez, and you can't replace him. You want to know why? Because there ain't three guys in the league like him. There ain't a running back slash tight end slash halfback slash wide receiver. He can be replaced because he lined up at wide receiver 67% of the time. You understand what I'm saying? So we can get over that with Shane, with a combination of a Shane Vereen, who's a pretty good pass-catching back. Amendola gives you something vertical. Amendola a little quicker out of his cuts than Wes Welker. Don't sleep on Julian Edelman. You have Josh Boyce, the rookie, Aaron Dobson. You understand what I'm saying? You have options for the New England Patriots, and again, we're going to go back to the offensive line, which is top three in the league, and then we're going to look who takes the snaps, and we're going to say that they're going to be all right.
Okay. Anything you want to say back, Mike?
Let's see.
I think we had two good points of view here.
Like I say, only time will tell. You know, I see where Tex is coming from. He opened up my eyes on a couple of things. You know, Hernandez, maybe his flexibility equals his replaceability, in other words. So, you know, like I say, that, you know, that's something I didn't even think about. One thing I can look at is how quickly the Patriots released him. So, you know, maybe if this was a guy who they thought they were going to depend on, they maybe wanted to hold on to him a little bit more to see if the Chargers were going to stick. But they got rid of his, but quick, fast, and in a hurry. So, I think that says something to him. And maybe, you know, maybe what he was, you know, other things were coming out that he was, you know, kind of wasn't that good of a teammate either. He cursed out Wes Welker and some other stuff. So maybe that says a lot about, what was going on behind the scenes in New England there. Okay, that was our first time going heads up. Next time we have a debate topic, we'll do it again, whoever wants to do it.
I want to do one against you. I'm going to do one against you, Cali Mike.
Yeah.
I want to do one.
Yeah. Okay. We'll get into that. Let me get this caller though. 813. Right. How's it going? Hello.
It's Matt.
Hey, how's it going, Matt?
Not
Hello?
Going to
813.
Yeah, the phone was on mute. How y'all fellas doing tonight?
We good.
Doing good, man. Feeling good? How about yourself?
Nice to hear you guys back on the airwaves.
Good.
Yeah.
I think it's hilarious. Anytime something happens like this with, you know, a higher profile guy, one guy. I'm not talking about, you know, like Marshall, the whole team dies in a freaking plane crash. I'm talking about one guy. It's the end of the world for the team. They're not going to do anything, you know. I don't understand why the media always goes so negative. It's the end of the world type thing. Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez are not going to be a major contributors to this team this year. Let's face it. But has the hoodie ever had problems finding people off the scrap heap? I hate that terminology, but I mean he got probably one of the best corners in the guy's particular draft, getting Alphonso Denard, who was a first-round pick in the seventh round. He's starting for him. He was taken off with a knee injury during minicamp, but he'll be ready for the beginning of the season. So I don't think there's really anything to worry about as far as the New England Patriots, because they're going to play football the way they play football no matter what.
And it is. Go ahead, man.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say now, since I am objective, since I do look at two sides, you're asking Tom Brady to shoulder a load when he's older quarterback, and he's not mobile anyway. He's a statue, but you're asking him to shoulder more of the load, which can potentially be a problem. I thought you saw that with Drew Brees this past year in New Orleans a little bit. But if you're asking a guy to shoulder a load, you can probably, you'll take your chances with Brady. You're not taking your chances with Chad Henne or Ryan Fitzpatrick or, you know, somebody like that. But you'll take your chances like that with Tom Brady. So that's the flip side of it in my eyes.
So do you guys look at it as the Patriots as an organization, which makes players like this irreplaceable, or do you think it could be any team in the NFL? Maybe it's NFL because it's such a high talent of play, or can you attribute this to the Patriots and a coach like Belichick?
Well,
I think you have to have the players. I think you have to have the coach. Like I said. Like I was saying earlier, these guys went. I mean, they didn't make the playoffs. But these guys went 11-5 without Tom Brady. I mean, with Matt Castle, you know, who on his way out of the NFL.
That's a good point.
It's the team. It's the coaching. It's the people that they have in that organization. That's why I said Aaron Hernandez, Gronkowski aside, they're going to be fine. It doesn't matter really the age of Tom Brady, because they're going to have somebody there right behind him, Ryan Mallett. Whoever is there is succeed. And it's because of their front office. It's because of the scouts they have, because of the coaching and the way people are prepared there. They're prepared to play football and win. And that's why they're successful every year. That's why they're in the playoffs every year. That's why they're favored, you know, they end up going to the Super Bowl every year. It's because of the way that they prepare and the way that they handle their business.
Do you also think that you can attribute it to the program, the amount of exposure a player gets? Like let's say, for instance, Aaron Hernandez, we're just now hearing that he shot this other guy in the face. And this happened like 2 years ago. We heard nothing about it. Somehow it was a complete cover-up, and now we're hearing about it. Can you attribute that to the organization too, as opposed to maybe another organization like the Raiders, to where they can't even cover up a fight between the two coaches in the off season?
I think that's a great question. I think you do, because that organization does play it pretty much. They try to handle everything in house, and I think that's a good way as far as a team mentality to go about it. Now, as far as the case regarding the guy that got shot in the face, he never filed a police report. So, in all fairness to Aaron Hernandez, we can't even say this guy shot him in the face. So, I mean, he says years later, he shot me in the face, now I want to sue him and get him money. It sounds a lot like a desperation attempt to get money. Because if he shot him in the face to begin with, say, brah, shot me in the face. It was an accident, but he shot me in the face. He didn't name
names.
Yeah,
that now he shot him in the face. I believe the guy lost
money.
The eye, too.
Yeah, he's not getting any money. He's not getting any money now. I was talking about it at the end of my show. If he didn't settle before Aaron Hernandez gets arrested, he's not getting any money. It'll be gone, long gone. Especially.
So do you think that he's doing this? Do you think he's doing this because he knows that the money might not be there?
Yeah, I think it's a good likeliness. Obviously, Aaron Hernandez must have played his cards out, you know. Now, does this make it any more likely that the guy wins the case? Yeah. I mean, can he still get money from him, Aaron Hernandez being in prison for life? But yeah, unless he gets a death penalty, you know. And who knows what kind of financial situation Aaron Hernandez is in. Who's saying that when he goes to jail, his estate isn't sold off to pay debt and creditors first? And because that's the first place it goes to, is debt and creditors. And then whatever's left over after probate would go through to whoever would win a civil lawsuit. He'd be just in line, just like, you know, a niece or a sister, you know?
He made some money, you know, but he ain't up there. Like, remember, football, you know, athletes are not making as like basketball athletes. So I mean, hey, now he's cut. Yeah. So hey, you know,
he signed a 5-year, $40 million contract last year. I don't know what the guaranteed money is, but I'm guessing we're gonna be hearing a arbitration from New England to get some of that money back pretty soon too now, because usually they have those behavioral clauses in there where they get that money back. So
they're probably not going to owe him a dime after today. Once he said he was in handcuffs, money's gone.
Here's
the thing about that, and I don't know the language of Hernandez's contract, but there is certain language in some contracts that allows a team to recap salary.
And you know that's very, very possible. Think about, he drops so low in the draft, and they pick up these questionable players, and I'm guaranteeing if Kraft has anything to do with it, he's going to make sure that he's in favor there. He has a young kid, has problems off the field. You know what? I got him by advice. I mean, you know, I was talking, you know, off air about where Tim Tebow would go. I thought it was either Packers or the Patriots. I was saying the most sense would make for Tebow and for an organization, if he wanted to play right away, would be the Jaguars because it's his hometown. But those two franchises, the Packers and the Patriots, made the most sense because they have secure quarterbacks that he can just sit there. He's content with being a backup, and that's why he's in New England, you know. And New England, obviously, look at how many players they pick up that, you know, may not be that great of players, but still they look a lot better when they're in that franchise. Just kind of like players like Luke Longley, they look like a whole lot better of a basketball player when he was playing with Jordan, you know? Mm-hmm. Kind of a similar thing.
Yeah. Robert Kraft, he's a very crafty owner. the way he runs that team, you know, is not like, you know, like Matt said, he's gonna make sure things are in his favor and in his team's favor. Really, the only player that's ever had some sort of leeway over him is Ben Brady. Other than that, you look at the players that they've rotated out of there, Troy Brown, Wes Welker, guys like that, once you lose your ability to help them out, or, you know, you cost too much money, he has no problem with getting rid of you. And like I said, we've seen that this offseason with Wes Welker. You know, we've seen it before with Troy Brown. They cut Troy Brown, re-signed him, and had him come back and play cornerback and all sorts of other wild stuff and helped him win a Super Bowl. Then they cut him again. So, you know, Robert Kraft, he's gonna do what's gonna be in favor of his team, for sure. And that's, you know, if that was going on with Hernandez,
you get somebody against the ropes like Tebow. It was just a matter of time, and it makes so much sense with Kraft and the way he worked for him to sign Tebow. Tebow was in a position. Nobody wanted to pick him up. And he was just waiting for that stock to drop. And that's what I was talking about before.
I'll say this, though. If Josh McDaniels was not in New England, will New England still pick up Tim Tebow? But Belichick did like him. Will Tebow still been a New England Patriot? Because you all know, because of McDaniels.
I think so.
What's the bigger? I think it's bigger than Josh Freeman. I was about to say Josh McDaniel.
Matt made a good point. You know, about how you know pathway to the value went down and picked the guy up, and you know, like I say, got him for basically nothing. So you know, he could sit there. Either he's going to develop or he's not. He's going to get gone. You know, I think he brought up a good point, and you know, that's what I think is going to happen with that guy.
Let me ask you, does he develop? Does he have skills that are sustainable long term in the NFL? Now let's be honest. You understand what I'm saying?
I think we went over this last week.
Be dead honest about it. I don't think
at the quarterback position. I mean, like I said, I don't know. I don't want to get into the whole Tim Tebow what he can do or not thing, but I mean, I'll just say I don't know, honestly, and that's my honest truth. I don't know, and I don't know if anybody
yes,
does.
You do. That's not true, Mike. I'm just sitting up here lying,
man.
Come on, man.
No, shout out to Michael saying that. I don't see him as no NFL quarterback.
I mean, look, we'll say no, but I mean, are y'all just you know more than Robert Kraft? He on the NFL team. Y'all know more. I mean, come on.
Of course you do.
You gotta look at it. There's a reason, and Belichick doesn't stand for no BS either. I mean, like I say, there's a reason they brought this guy there. That's all I'm gonna say. I don't know what he's gonna develop or what he's gonna do. Maybe they just wanted to give the guy a chance. I don't know. But like I say, there's some reason they brought him there.
There's some reason they brought him there.
Why do you think that they brought him to New England?
I'm not answering that. Y'all know my answer.
What'd you say? Listen, they bring him there because of the money. I said it on my show. I would sign him simply because I know he's going to make me millions of dollars. I know people are going to buy his jersey. His fans are very loyal. They will come to the stadium. They will buy the merchandise. They will buy tickets. You know, when we go to Florida or anywhere near Florida, people from Gainesville and Jacksonville, they will go to see him play. He has a huge following. I'm going to make millions off it. I said, sign him, one-year contract. He ended up getting a two for what I said, like a fourth-round pick money, which ended up being league minimum. It's a win-win. You sign him, you make millions, you're not paying a whole lot. He just wants to play. He's Rudy. He is Rudy.
Is he really?
I can't say he's as bad as Rudy. He's not as bad as Rudy was.
Put him in coach. No, I can't put him as Rudy.
No. Rudy, Tim Tebow has the talent level in terms of athleticism to be in the NFL. Yeah. Rudy didn't even have the athleticism to play college football. I can't put that on the same level.
Rudy made the team, buddy. Rudy made the team. He had the athleticism. It's just when that roster dwindled.
Rudy had the athleticism?
How much
yeah,
did
he make the tackle? You've seen the movie.
Yeah.
Rudy had
he
the
made
athleticism.
The team, buddy.
Whatever the case is, Tommy Frazier Jr. That's all I have to say. Tommy Frazier Jr. That's all I have to say.
We gotta look out for the blood clots.
Okay. Hey, look. I want to shift gears from Tebow because I want to hear what Tex had to say.
I want to hear what Tex had to say.
Because I'm about to
okay,
go.
Okay. Go ahead. I know you already said. Go ahead, Tex.
Well, we comparing him to Rudy. Rudy was willing to do anything to get on the field, but then you got Tebow. You got Tebow, who's supposed to be this humble athlete, talking about he ain't going to switch positions. He ain't in the career salvage. He ain't in the career salvage business. He in the quarterback business. You know
well,
what I'm saying?
Last time I checked, he was cut from the Jets as a fullback.
He what?
That was his position. When he was cut from the Jets, his position was listed as fullback.
I didn't see that on my official
there. I didn't even know that. Yeah, wow.
I mean, I thought it was quarterback.
Yeah, me either. No, it was fullback.
On my official depth charts, my guy's depth charts, I saw him as a quarterback. But he ain't no NFL quarterback. He's whatever he is, but he ain't no NFL quarterback. And he ain't no rookie because, like I said, when they came to him, if he would have been open to switching positions, he wouldn't even lasted that long on the waiver wire like he did or as a free agent. But no, he doesn't want to switch positions. You know, sometimes God wants you to do something different. You understand what I'm saying? No, seriously.
Let me broach this question on you guys. If you're a guy like Tebow, when you come in the league, do you do the position switch, maybe with still hopes of being quarterback like a Cordell Stewart? Do you come in as a slash guy, and maybe if you get the chance to show your talent at the court? I mean, they're even talking about maybe Darnell Robinson getting to play some QB this year.
Yeah, I know. Darnell Robinson. Who else? Who else you said? Antoine Randall L., the guy from Indiana. Slash. It could have been Tommy Frazier. It would have definitely been Tommy Frazier if he didn't have the blood clot, like
come
you said,
man.
Matt. But I would have made Tommy Frazier.
What'd
you
say?
My
thing
is Tommy
Frazier. There's only one Tommy Frazier, son.
Yeah, but Tim Tebow is Tommy Frazier. That's who he is. That's the point I'm saying. But seriously, Tim Tebow is being pushed to be the starting quarterback. Why is that? I don't know. I want to know why. I don't know why is that all of a sudden. But
no,
it is what it
Tim
is.
Tim Tebow is Joel Macavica with an arm. That's what he is.
Joel Macavica? Who is that? Hold on. I forgot who that was.
Arm is overrated in the NFL.
Okay.
How intelligent is Tebow?
No, I'm saying impact on the... When you talk about comparing like major and comparing their college careers, like impact on the sport. I mean, Tommy Frazier had a big impact. Tim Tebow had a big impact. You know, all right, yeah. Tommy Frazier had a blood clot, but let's just say if he didn't have a blood clot, he would have been an NFL player. Now, and they would have made Tommy Frazier change positions.
Like,
they would have been like,
Cordell
we don't
Stewart.
Play like that. What'd you say?
He would have been Cordell Stewart.
Yeah, he would have been Slash or something like that. But Tim Tebow, he comes in the league, you know. He showed what he could do. I'll give it that. He won his games in Denver, but he didn't look that good doing it. And, you know, the coaches didn't like what they saw. The coaches didn't like what they saw in the Jets. But the media pushes him to become quarterback. And they wouldn't have done that for somebody like Tommy Frazier. I don't think they would have. They would have been like, kick him out of the game.
Imagine Randall talking about he ain't going to play nothing but quarterback. My thing is be about career survival, not about what you're not doing if you're Tebow and you don't have a sustainable long-term skill set. Be in the survival. Not about yourself.
There's one question I haven't ever heard anybody debate or talk. What if Peyton Manning doesn't go to Denver? Where's Tebow at now? Would he have started? Would he have been their quarterback? He took him to a playoff game. He beat the Steelers, even though they were, you know, kind of falling apart at that point.
He wouldn't have been.
What do you guys think about that?
Wouldn't have been because you want to know why? Because John Elway and John Fox inherited Tebow.
That's true. Yeah, that's true, man.
Yeah.
I think Elway was as much to do with Tebow not being there as Manning did. They were going to get somebody no matter what.
Yeah, because Elway never would have bought into that, man. John Elway wants John Elway back there. Or a quarterback something close to it. So
he wouldn't have bought that.
What'd you say?
He still doesn't have anything near that.
I mean, Peyton Manning is not far off, you know.
He's got a closer option than Tebow, though.
Wait a second. He's what?
I mean, who would you rather have? Would you have Peyton Manning or Tim Tebow?
Oh, my goodness.
Is that a real question?
I said John Elway wants John Elway back there at the quarterback at Denver. And I said Peyton Manning is closer to it than Tim Tebow. I don't think that's a crazy statement to make. I mean, hey.
That's not. Yeah, you're right.
You'd rather have Tebow over Peyton Manning?
No, you're saying Peyton Manning. That John Elway wants somebody closer to him, and Clausel said Peyton Manning is closer to
But my point
John
is
Elway.
But my point
John
is this.
Elway wants a quarterback that can play quarterback like it's supposed to be played. That's what John Elway wants.
Exactly.
John
yeah.
Elway wants John Elway. And here's the thing. John Elway is a better quarterback than Peyton Manning because John Elway won Super Bowls, plural.
Look, here we go.
Peyton Manning wins Super Bowls. You know, you have to go by a resume. I mean, you can rack up as many stats as you want to. If stats are everything, then the greatest quarterback in college football history is Kingsbury. It coaches Texas A&M now.
So didn't it take Terrell Sanders getting off for John Elway to do his thing, you know? I mean, now I don't know what we're trying to get at. We know Elway is great. Elway is one of the greatest ever. We understand
great.
That. Manning is one of the greatest. So what are we talking about?
All I'm saying, the question was posed, would you rather have Tebow than Manning? No, no one would. No one would rather have him.
That's crazy.
What I'm saying is they still don't have Elway because I don't know if Peyton Manning is a tremendous receiver, great or tremendous quarterback. One of the greatest of all time, probably one of the greatest field generals of all time. He's a head coach, an offensive coordinator, all rolled into one that throws the ball and actually does it. You're not going to get a whole lot better than that. The only problem is he's not really winning championships. He's won one.
Well, who
is it? You don't think they can win the championship with Peyton Manning there, Matt?
Marino didn't get one. I mean, come on. I mean, you're talking about he's not Elway, but who is? Elway, greatest prospect ever at the quarterback position to probably come out of college. Yeah, he didn't even have to play football. He can go play baseball and make millions and millions and millions of dollars.
Would have made more than baseball than football.
Tim Tebow could have played baseball.
But
a lot of people don't know that. He could have played baseball.
But I'm saying, what are we talking about? He's not. I mean, that's like.
That's what I'm saying. Matt, are you saying you don't think Manning,
you on Tebow.
Manning can win a Super Bowl there?
No,
I don't think he can either.
I disagree. Like I said, my status earlier, when I had said the day they got Wes Walker, I said the Broncos are my team that's going to go all the way. Yeah, they could have went all the way last year. I mean, Manning did his thing, but just that one play, hey, that cost it, which, hey, they going to get that taken care of, but still, they had a great season last year, man.
Okay, Matt, why don't you guys think that they can win it?
In a
I mean, I just think I like
NFC,
New England.
Because he's in the NFC.
AFC, by the way.
And the AFC is wide open. It's not as hard as the NFC right now.
It's not wide open.
Historically, he doesn't beat the Patriots.
That's a good
But
yeah,
he has.
He has a better chance of going to the Super Bowl with the Arizona Cardinals.
Really? You don't believe that? Come on, you don't actually believe that.
I don't know about that, man. They got some young guys up there, but I don't know about that, man.
I want to get back on Tebow. I kind of want to get back on Tebow.
I don't know about that, man.
I know you do, cousin.
Get back
on Tebow, man.
We gotta move on.
No, my point is, I want to say this. I think Tim Tebow will be the starting quarterback of the New England Patriots in about 2-3 years. He will be the starting quarterback of the New England Patriots in 2-3 years. Yes.
But you don't think that'll be deserved if he sits behind Tom Brady and waits his turn? You don't think that'll be deserved for him to at least get a shot?
He's getting a shot now, but he's going to be in about 2-3 years. He will be the starting quarterback of the New England Patriots.
They're gonna get rid of
Ryan Mallett. Think about this. Okay.
They get rid of Ryan Mallett, and they may they have a plan either too.
Okay.
They see something in Tebow, or they got somebody else that's
right.
in there. They do
right.
that.
Hold on, real quick, and this is I want to say this, okay? And this is my conspiracy theory. I have no proof of this. I'm just going by speculation, okay?
There we go.
All right. So now think about this, okay? These owners have a lot of money in the NFL.
When somebody says they have a theory with no proof, that means made up too, by the way, everybody.
Right, whatever. Well, look at this. These owners have lots of money. they get taxed by the government, I guess, 30. I don't know what the tax rate is for those type of, for that income bracket. And, you know, Tim Tebow is a conservative. You know, he's a conservative. This is political. You know this is political. Tim Tebow is a conservative. I'm pretty sure they associate with the Rush.
I like how he gets defensive and argues before anybody argues with him.
I'm pretty sure these owners hang out with the Rush Limbaughs, the Bill O'Reillys. I'm telling you, there's something, the Mitt Romneys. I'm bet my bottom dollar. They were talking. They know these owners here. And they talk to them. They be like, man, you need to put Tim Tebow in there. You know, they're getting in their ear. And then one of these owners is like, hey, let's get him. That's basically what happened. You know that happened. It was some political connection to this. This was not a football move. This was not a – I bet my bottom dollar on this. I don't have any proof yet.
You contribute,
I got to do my research.
You contribute Tim Tebow's NFL career to the political stance of the conservative right.
I would not be surprised. I am not lying to you.
Ladies
think
and gentlemen, Quasar Mathis has officially canceled Christmas this year.
All right, think about this. The love and the hate relationship with Tim Tebow is Democrat, Republican. That's what it boils down to. If you hate Tim Tebow, you're probably on the left. If you like Tim Tebow, you're probably on the right, 9 times out of 10. All right, so that's what it boils down to when it comes down to it. So this is political.
If you could find me one modicum of proof about this, I would entertain it, honestly.
Okay, I'll give you some circumstantial evidence right now. You want me to give you some? You want me to give you some circumstantial evidence right now? First of all, listen to the Fox News channel. When Terrell Suggs said something about Tim Tebow on ESPN, he was chastised by the Fox News channel. When Stephen A. Smith said something about Tim Tebow, he was chastised by the Fox News channel. What I'm saying is, if you say something negative about them, you're gonna be heard on Fox News. All right.
Okay.
Tim Tebow had his own show. Tim Tebow had his own show on the NFL Network. Excuse me?
I said, I'll give you that, but what is the connection between them and the NFL owners, though?
What's the connection between Fox News and NFL owners?
Yes.
That's what you said? What I said is those are high-income people. They are being taxed. 9 times out of 10, those owners are Republican. I'm 9 times out of 10, and most of them are Republican. Most of them. Not that there's anything wrong with it. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that from a political standpoint.
I'm not saying that, but they
affiliate with the Rush Limbaughs. They affiliate with the Bill O'Reillys. That's what I'm saying. That's their circle of people.
Okay. I mean, like I said,
there's no proof of that. There's no proof of that. And I know, Matt, you're like, what the hell? He's coming up with something again. What I'm saying is, this is my theory. This is political. That's the point I'm making. This is political.
I answered this argument before. That's why he's not saying anything.
Is Rooney Republican?
Excuse me?
Rooney, is he Republican?
I don't know.
Who?
Oh, yeah, he went for, okay. Yes, he went for Barack Obama.
Rooney,
okay, give me an example.
Like he might be a Democrat.
He endorsed Barack Obama. Rooney endorsed Barack Obama. Okay, I understand you can go by that. You think Kraft is a Democrat? You think Kraft endorsed Barack Obama?
Before Rooney endorsed Obama, though, they were Republicans, though.
What'd you say?
No, I'm saying before the Rooneys endorsed President Obama, they were Republicans.
But the point I'm making is this: Tim Tebow being in the NFL is political. It's political. But it's whatever. It has nothing. It has nothing to do with football.
I'm seeing your angle. I'm seeing your angle on that. On part of what you're saying.
All right, but keep on, man.
I mean, like I say, it could. I mean, I can't totally throw that out. But you know, it is very circumstantial. You know, like I say, I would like to see if you could prove, you know, a part of solid evidence. I would like to see that.
Published his book.
We can't look at the fact that Robert Kraft got his said he got his Super Bowl ring stolen by Putin when he was hanging out with George Bush. So maybe that could be a link right there. We know that he's friends with Bush, and you know they're saying that Putin stole the Super Bowl ring. So I don't know. Maybe that could be proof that he has a relationship with them. I don't know.
Hey, we know Jerry Jones hangs out with George Bush on a regular.
Yeah,
so
enough,
I'm just
Jerry,
saying, you know,
enough, Jerry.
We know that. So I'm just saying that these owners hang out with these politicians. I know that for that's fact. So
absolutely, we hang out
okay,
at the ranch like every single weekend.
Hey, look, John, I want to switch
whatever.
Up real quick while we got Matt on here. I want to get to we're about to do our NFC South preview. I want to jump into that. We got about 20 minutes left, so let's jump into our South preview. Let's start off with a team you guys know and love, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Clavel, you want to give us a little preview into what you think their season is going to hold for them?
Well, I mean, they'll be better. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. I got Atlanta winning the division. And I got New Orleans number two. Well, I don't know. I got New Orleans number two. I just think with the friction between Josh Freeman and his coach, I think, you know, something's going to happen.
Well,
you
that's
know,
your picks or Chasma's picks?
That's my picks. I don't think Tampa Bay's going to. I got them third in the division. I got Carolina fourth in the division. I got New Orleans second in the division, and I got the Falcons number one in the division. Just because that friction between Josh Freeman and the coach, I don't think, and the city too. Well, I would say the city, but you know, the city's kind of not happy with him. But I don't think he's mad at the city. Whereas I think he's kind of has friction with the coach, and the coach is not sold on him. So I think.
Well,
is Glennon a
viable backup or somebody?
Absolutely not. He's not a viable backup. I mean, there's a reason why Russell Wilson was starting over him. So let's just put it that way. So you know, Glennon's not a viable backup. No, they're going to have to get another quarterback.
What improvements do you think that the Bucs have made this year, or what improvements do you think they should have made this year?
Oh, they made a good. I mean, on the defensive side, clearly, you know, they got Darrell Revis. They drafted the guy from Mississippi State. They got Mark Barron, who I think is going to be a pretty good defensive safety from the run support standpoint. You know, I mean, they got the guy from Nebraska, Levante David. He's pretty good. I mean, I think defensively, they're pretty good. You know, they're trying to compete.
Also, you got to say they signed Dehani Golson, the boy from San Francisco.
Yeah, yeah. So they're loaded on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, they're trying to keep up with Atlanta. You know, Atlanta got Roddy White and Julio Jones, who's a top five receiver. But I still think Atlanta's going to win the division, though. I still think Atlanta won the division. I think they'll win it closely, though. I don't think Atlanta's going to go like 11-5, 12-4 type of thing. I think they'll go like 10-6 and win the division.
Okay. What I'm looking at we've seen Jeff Dims play a couple of different games. He played a couple of different roles with the Patriots returning kicks. What role do you think he's going to fit in with on the Bucs, if any?
I don't know. I really don't know. I have to see him play. He's the guy that came from the Olympic, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't know, man. Can he even take hits in the league? I don't know. I mean, he never took hits when he was at Florida.
He was pretty, you know. He usually stick around on kick returns. He was pretty good when he was with the Patriots, and you know, they traded LeGarrette Blount for him. So, you know, it seems like pretty much the guy. I know that the fed at running back with Doug Martin, but I wanted to see, you know, maybe thought he might be a return.
I mean, he'll be a complimentary guy.
You know, late though, when the Bucs traded LeGarrette Blount, they traded. He was a draft day trade, right? When they traded, what team they traded him to?
They traded him to the Patriots.
Mm.
Yep.
Matt, you have anything to say about the Bucs this year?
Absolutely. I think the Bucs come in second in the division. They go to the playoffs because they're all in. Next year, we have to understand, they're going to have 20 unrestricted free agents. The team they had this year, they got money invested in this.
Damn.
Next year, I guarantee to have those people, and this I found this talking with Mark Cook from Pewter Report. 20 unrestricted free agents next year. The writing is on the wall for Josh Freeman. He has to produce. He's ready to produce, and he has gotten better each year. I think this is going to be a year. If he comes out, he plays decent. He's going to get re-signed. He'll get a contract. I don't think Glennon's a quality replacement, I think, 3 years down the line or towards the end of a second Freeman contract, he could be the guy for the Buccaneers. From what I understand, he's progressing well. He's learning a lot quick. He's not yet even a quality backup, but the guy's learning a lot. The defense, like you guys said, I think the Bucs defense right now is the best in the NFL. I said this before the draft. If they could fill those key spots, they would be best in the NFL, hands down. And I think that's what we're looking at going into this year. And I think that defense can, you know, keep it so the scoring is down and make it so the offense is on the field. The other team's offense, you know, is constantly not getting a chance to score, and the Bucs offense stays on the field. So I like the Bucs to finish second. Atlanta is going to be hard to beat twice. You know, it could very well come down to, you know, look at who did they commonly beat or not beat within the division. You know, I think they sweep the Panthers. I think they split with the Saints, and I think they split with Atlanta. I just think that the Bucs are going to end up finishing second to Atlanta, followed by the Saints, and then on down the row with the teams that don't really matter.
What do you think, Tex?
All right, just real quick, I think there are several reasons why each team in the NFC South cannot win a division. You start with Atlanta. You have the offense, you have the wide receivers, you have the tight end, you have Steven Jackson. You still have a defense that's pretty slow. Although they did add OTU Manure, the O-line is a mess. You move to Carolina, who is an intriguing team because they have Cam Newton. They have two backs that don't fit their zone read, although Szczęsny should – not Szczęsny, but I forget the guy's name. But they're staying with zone read with the backs, but neither one is a fit. But keep an eye on Carolina's front seven. Could end up being one of the best front sevens in the NFL. I mean, they have some studs on the D-line and that linebacker, provided John Beason will stay healthy. The Buccaneers, I like their offense. They get the two guards back. Barton is a 2,000 total yard, 12-plus touchdown type of back. Defensively, certainly they upgraded with Deshaun Golson and Darrell Revis, but still no speed off the edge. I don't trust the quarterback. I think he's a very talented quarterback, but his short to intermediate accuracy leaves something to be desired. This is not a matchup precision quarterback we're talking about. We're talking about a deep ball thrower. But short to intermediate needs to work on that. You can't really help a quarterback become more accurate. His decision-making is suspect at times. His numbers weren't as good. I mean, his play wasn't as good as his numbers suggest. He's similar to Andy Dalton out there in Cincinnati. And as far as the Saints are concerned, I mean, the coach is back. Drew Brees is Drew Brees. The defense might set all kinds of bad records this season because they are pretty bad. But they also have a shot to get a lot of turnovers, just like they did back in 2009 when they won the Super Bowl. But if I had to pick a 1-2 in the division, I think I had to go with New Orleans and Atlanta. I mean, they have the two best quarterbacks in the division. They have the two best coaches. I don't see any reason why neither one of those teams finish 1-2 in that order or reverse.
Hey, Tex, I got a quick question for you. Why is it Drew Brees is just Drew Brees, but Tom Brady is getting old?
Excuse me?
You said earlier Tom Brady is getting older.
No.
You can't put that pressure on him. But Drew Brees, yeah, they're like within a year of each other.
Yeah, but and by the way, I think Brees is not as older. He's 34. But I caught that earlier when you said that. I ignored it. But I remember because I didn't want to go there. But when I say he's getting older, I mean he's a statue anyway. You understand what I'm saying? He's a statue even when he was younger. When I say he's getting older, I mean, okay, they don't have some of the skill guys they had, so now Brady is having to break in some of these rookies that they have, some of these young guys, second year back that they have, along with, you know, Amendola being new. I mean, I'm saying he has more of a burden on him now. That's what I mean, as opposed to Drew Brees, where – yeah, he's getting up there, but Drew Brees is the best quarterback in the league inside the pocket, in pocket conflict, in between the guards. He steps up like no other, and he delivers. You understand what I'm saying? Drew Brees has Marcus Colston and Darren Sproles. He has his O-line. He has left tackle problems, but he's not going to be asked to carry everything like Tom Brady might be asked to this year, given the circumstances. That's where I was coming from with that.
I also forgot about Jimmy Graham, too, Tex, your boy from the U.
Well, that was obvious, so I didn't even have to say that.
But what did Mike, what do you think about the NFC, NFC South?
Well, I mean, I was saying that when we first was talking about the NFC South, about the two teams. I mean, you can go either or. I guess I'm going to have to base on guests, giving them a little edge because I kind of like what they did, but still, both teams still kind of got some flaws on the defense side. But I just want to say how they added. I probably would say the Falcons being one and the Saints being two as well. I mean, both, you know, I just think maybe the other side of the Saints going to it because I like Drew Brees over Matt Ryan. You know, Drew Brees is a Super Bowl quarterback, an MVP. You know, it comes down to the big games. You know, he's won some, you know, playoff games, of course, won the Super Bowl. You know, on the side of the defense side, I think their defense might could be, you know, maybe with the coach of Rob Ryan, I think their defense might be a bit better with him, with his scheme, because I thought he did good with Dallas, and I'm just still, you know, was kind of shocked they let him go, you know, as that defensive coordinator. So I think that D could be a lot better than it was last year. And, of course, Sean Payton being back. I think they'll lose.
Make a big difference, too. Sean Payton is going to be coming back.
I also kind of agree with Tex. I think them getting Uche Omorua was a good move, but still, they still need some more on their defense.
Well, if the Bucs put up to their potential, do you think that the NFC South, you think this could be possibly the best conference in football?
I don't know. It's so tough, man. All these divisions are tough now, man. It's tough to really, like, separate which divisions are tough in football.
Well, I'm just thinking, if you look at the South, let's say, you know, like you said, you got the Bucs. Like Matt said, they could possibly have the best defense in football. I mean, looking at them, they're almost, you know, they're like paper tigers right now. I mean, they got pretty much 2,000-yard receivers, 1,500-yard rusher, defense. I mean, they got everything you need to win. You can say the same thing about the Falcons, and you can almost say the same thing about the Saints. So, I mean, it just seems, you know, like I said, the Panthers are going to probably be the team out this year. And, you know, that's mostly due just because, like I said, they're a young team. Once they start getting some pieces, if they have a chance to get some pieces around Cam Newton, I can see them being better too. But, you know, just like I said, with those three teams, it seems like either one of them could, you know, be a contender possibly.
I think a couple weeks ago or last week, he was saying that he thinks Carolina's going to lose patience with Cam Newton.
Yep, I do. That's my prediction in about 2 years. They're going to get rid of him.
Well, I mean, what other conference do you think that, you know, in terms of talent at least, do you think they could compete with NFC South, Quadro?
I mean, I kind of like what the NFC West is doing. I mean, St. Louis ain't no scrub. Anyone that made games, but they not that team. And then, what'd you say?
You got to remember, though, they just lost Steven Jackson, though, too.
That's
better.
You got to remember, the Rams went 4-1-1 in that division last year. They got better this offseason.
Yeah, they're not. I mean, Steven Jackson, I mean, is he going to be Steven Jackson in Atlanta? I'm not convinced of that. I think he's going to be like a I don't think he's going to be the same type of Steven Jackson you saw in Atlanta. Hey, I mean, not Atlanta, but in St. Louis.
He never really slowed down. In St. Louis,
he never really did.
All you had to do was stop Steven Jackson. Now stop Roddy White, Tony. I tell you what, and this is what could hurt Atlanta, is in between the 20s. If the quarterback is making mistakes in between the 20s. But the deal with Atlanta is if you keep them out of the end zone when they hit the red zone, you got a shot. But I don't see anybody doing that. That's why I'm saying if you keep them between the 20s, you'll be able to beat them. Because when they hit the red zone, it's over.
Yeah, that's tough.
And then you got the NFC North. I mean, Green Bay still Green Bay. I mean, Detroit's talented.
I think that's Green Bay spot. That's Green Bay spot.
I think so too.
Yeah.
I think that's Green Bay spot too. The East with the Giants and the Cowboys and the Redskins.
Is Atlanta? Can we say Atlanta? Would you rank them as one of your top three offenses in the league?
I rank them in top three offenses. Yeah,
maybe. But you know what has a potential to knock all this stuff off again with Atlanta is the offensive line. It's a mess.
Yeah. That's gonna be a big part of it too.
Yeah.
Huge part of it. Like I said, Atlanta. You know, he's kind of one of them. I like them a lot. I love the addition of Steven Jackson. I'm really glad that he's gonna get to be with a good team his last couple of years in the league. I think he's still going to be a 1,200-1,300-yard guy. Oh, yeah, exactly. I had a couple of years, Chris Greer. I think he's still going to be a 1,200-1,300-yard guy, get you probably about 10 touchdowns. Like I said, I want to see what the Bucs are going to do, man. You know, if Josh Freeman can play up to his game, you know, they got everything in place. It's one of the things, you know, like I said, they're paper tigers, you know. Now they just got to get on the field and show that they're real tigers, you know. But they got, you know, they look at the wide receiver tandem, the running back. I mean, they got everything. You know, they got everything there. It's just, you know, it's a matter of
time. But they got everything except for the most important thing, and that's the quarterback and coach relationship, man. That quarterback and coach got to be on the same page.
Exactly.
If they ain't on the same page, they don't like each other. I mean, you know, you can have a conflict with a receiver. What'd you say?
Are you thinking because Shiano's a Republican and Freeman's a Democrat?
I don't know. Maybe. You never know.
Bravo.
I mean, if you don't, like I said, you can have a conflict with a receiver and a coach or the quarterback. They got to be on the same page, I mean, to win a championship. If they ain't on the same page to win a championship, if they ain't on the same page, they ain't winning no championship. You know,
so Matt,
well, I don't know. I mean, Dan Reeves and John Elway weren't on the same page. That's a situation right there. So, I don't know.
Usually, in those type of situations, the star quarterback is usually the coach to go. But you know, like I say, you guys are saying that it's more likely to be the quarterback to go.
It's gonna be the quarterback that's gonna go. Yeah, if there's a conflict between Freeman and Shiano, it's gonna be Freeman that's gonna go.
And Shiano's been drafting, so he wasn't even coach when he got there. So, you know, of course they're going to go with getting rid of Freeman. But, man, you had said after this season, going into the 2014 season, I mean, you said after this season, the Bucs got 20 unrestricted free agents?
Yep.
So, say the Bucs, I mean, I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs. I don't have them winning that division or even being second. So, if that happens, they don't make the playoffs. Could Shiano be feeling the heat going into next year, or could the Bucs decide they do so bad? Let's say they go finish in fourth. Could the Bucs decide to part ways with Greg Schiano too?
No.
Is that bad?
Let's say if they miss the playoffs this year, which I doubt that they do. Let's say they miss it this year. He'll still probably have a year, two at most, in order to right ship. Because a lot of stuff that he came on, they spent money 2 years in a row. They're going to want to see playoffs, but – again, they're going to also want to develop talent they have. If the defensive line does not show up this year and they allow a lot of running yards, I mean, again, that could be part of the problem. If Josh Freeman just drops, you know, a big goose egg and he's a dud this year, And that could be another reason to say, hey, let's see what we can do about grooming Gleason. Like I said, he's a couple years down the road. You know, give him a chance to play with the players that he's drafted. You know, work with his team. You know, I mean, it's hard to say, looking at, I mean, it's hard to say that the Bucks don't make the playoffs. Just look at their team. They have as good of, if not a better, receiver combination in Mike Williams and Vincent Jackson as Julio Jones and Roddy White.
No.
We don't.
Hold that down. No.
They have more depth at the receiver position than Atlanta does.
No way.
And there's all this talk about Steven Jackson. Let's face it, Steven Jackson is a runner between the 20s because his touchdowns are usually long runs. You don't see a lot of short yardage because the Rams didn't get inside the 20.
I'm supporting this. I never seen this. He didn't score much anyway because the Rams just couldn't be. If Steven Jackson wasn't moving the ball, they weren't moving the ball. I think you need to go back to when they had some offensive success instead of just recently when they're not having it.
Well, they had offensive success when Warner was there. That's the last time they had offensive success, and unfortunately Steven Jackson wasn't there for that.
That's not true. They had a year with Mark Bolger where Steven Jackson.
Oh, yeah, you're right. The year that they had a losing record and backed into the playoffs. Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember that.
I don't even remember them making the playoffs, but I know when they had the offense clicking, Steven Jackson was a 2,000-yard, 16-touchdown running back. I remember that vivid.
I remember that, and he was young.
I can't say the Bucks
33
wide
now?
Better than
34?
The Falcons wide. Vincent Jackson not greater than Roddy White.
Okay,
I could put Vincent Jackson. He's a pretty good receiver, but not. I don't put Mike Williams up there with Julio. I put Vincent Jackson. He's pretty good.
Yo, he's a one-dimensional wide receiver. One-dimensional wide receiver.
He's pretty good. Vincent Jackson's pretty good.
No, Randy
Moss. I like his height though, man.
Wait a minute.
Y'all didn't see
Randy Moss in New England running routes? Deep cross, deep dig. Y'all didn't catch that?
Yeah.
You didn't
catch that?
We're up against our time limit right now. So, look, what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to continue this next weekend. If you guys want to jump on the CMT Firestorm, we can go back. I think we're going to get two new heads up contestants for next weekend. It's either going to be me and Clausell or Matt. Or I'm going to try to see me and Matt and Tex. I don't know. But it's going to be interesting. I already know who's going to win if it's going to be me and Clausell. So I don't even want to
be
there. I always win.
Thank you for complimenting me. I've won those ones for the past 13 years.
Political approach. Those conspiracy theories are mighty argumentative, let me tell you.
Anyway, you guys,
might throw some junior comments out there.
Thanks for listening to us. We've had a good program. Y'all come get us back next weekend. Peace, y'all.
All right, y'all.